Just now, Tommy, how you doing?
I'm all of a sudden really hungry. I don't know why, Greggs. I don't know why, but that sounds like a great auction item. Fantastic to see contributions. And man, that would be a nice soiree with some couples. And Strutty's right. That's a good point. You know, the one person usually doing all the cooking with a little bit of help from their significant other. This is a night off, a night to enjoy some splendor. A very nice touch indeed. So, yeah, my tummy's grumbling after that, Greggs. Thanks a lot.
Hey, no problem, buddy. We should mention the NHL schedule is going to officially be released later today. This year now, there's 32 teams, 8 in each division. You know that so Edmonton's going to play home and away against the teams in the East once. There's 32 games. Teams in the Central Division, they're going to play them 3 times. 4 of them they play at home twice, 1 on the road. The other 4 they play once at home and then twice on the road. Then within their division, 5 teams they will play 4 times, and then 2 other teams they will play 3 times. So that's the schedule now. So if you think about that, you will have 20 games plus, what is that, 26 in your division. If my math is correct, and then you will have the other 16 teams you're playing, another 8 teams, that's 24, and then you're going to have another 32. So I think my math is correct, yeah. So 32 games in your division, 24 against the, or no, 32 teams against the other conference. Mm-hmm. You have more games against the other conference, actually, than you do in your own division. It's kind of weird. And then you'll have 26 in your division and 24 games in the other conference. So, in the other division in your conference. Makes sense?
I think so. I'm terrible at math, though. So
yeah.
But I believe
you. So 32 against the East, 24 against the Central, right. 26 against the Pacific. Yeah, that's a lot easier, Gregor. Figure it out. It was a terrible explanation the first time. I apologize. Jeez. I apologize to everyone. So
you wanted
there
it.
There you go.
Yeah. Speaking of the schedule. Yeah. It just came out, boys. I don't know if you caught that. Oilers open up at home against Vancouver on Wednesday, October 13th. I just want to bring that up.
No, I love it. I love it. Well, Tommy, let's get into it. You know, Juju Arcara has been around for a while with the Oilers. And, you know, I think just consistency has always been an issue. I thought this past year he made some strides in that area. But it sounds like he will not be qualified. In your opinion, should he have been qualified? And B, would you bring him back if you could negotiate a lower number?
In this scenario, Strutty, no, not should be qualified. And for less than what he was making over the past couple of years, if you strike out with other free agents that could fill that third line center position with some PK time, then maybe you look back and revisit Juju Arcara and say, hey, we're going to give you less than you were getting before. Sorry, we're in a flat cap environment, and that's the world we live in right now, but this is an NHL job, you're an NHL player, and I think he's going to be one of those guys that's going to be looking for work, like a lot of NHL players that might be getting squeezed out this offseason. But yeah, I'd revisit it if you don't get maybe guys that are higher on the priority list free agent wise, Strutty, to fill that third line center hole, and then you go back to Old Faithful, a guy you know and have groomed and brought along, and who, like you said, had some moments last year where he looked like he had finally arrived and on a consistent basis. But I don't think he's very high up on the priority list. But we'll see what happens. There's got to be a lot of chips that need to fall in the coming weeks here.
Yeah, because, you know, I've been on record. I really feel that third line center spot's something they need. And with all due respect to Jujar and to Ryan McLeod today, those guys, when they center line, it for a good team, that's a fourth line, you know, and that's mm-hmm. that's just the way it is. So, you know, if you're going to bring back Jujar, decide that's all you got, you know, is there a player out there like a right-hand shot center, like a, you know, I think Glenn Denning fits that role. And so you're going to have a fourth line, but maybe it gives you a different look in some situations. And you hope that Glenn Denning becomes a placeholder for when Ryan McLeod can push his way up there, because it's, you know, you're not going to fail everything externally, either through UFA or trade acquisitions here. I think you got to hope that some of your guys fill in, you know, in the meantime, but you can still upgrade and, you know, kind of, you know, get a different mix in there as far as at least a right-handed center that can win some draws.
Yeah. Glenn Denning, it's funny because obviously the connection to Ken Holland and you know, Nielsen and I have joked future Edmonton Oiler Luke Glenn Denning. I mean, it could happen. And I brought it up yesterday. I still like the idea of Eric Halla. I don't know if that's even reasonable or the potential for bringing in a guy like that is there, but he has had some good years. He is a pretty versatile centerman, and he has had good offensive seasons, but I don't know if Edmonton would be a fit for him. I think it would be a fit for the team. And, you know, I know he's a left shot guy too, but yeah, it would be nice to have a right shot centerman as well. A guy that you can rely on in your own zone, PK time, win you faceoffs, because we've seen the Oilers get burned on faceoffs quite a bit, especially last year. But yeah, I think Jujhar Khaira and the guys that we know from the past, again, we'll take a backseat to guys maybe even like Glenn Denning. And here's the other thing too is can Kyle Turris resuscitate his own career? I mean, you talk about in-house. I know it's a steep uphill battle for him to kind of reclaim a spot on this team. Let's see what kind of player shows up in the offseason. I know he's skating right now here in town, trying to put in that work, show the organization that he's committed to being an effective NHLer, but that's another guy that's in tow. I don't like his chances, but I'm just bringing that up as a long shot possibility.
Well, in your opinion, as we're joined by Tommy Gazzola, what did he have to bring? Like, what does he have to do to become, I guess, an everyday player or a player for the Edmonton Oilers, in your opinion? What does he have to change from last year?
Yeah, Stretti, I mean, notice him for doing good things. I mean, he didn't do much last year when he was on the ice. He was like a ghost at times, and he got knocked around a lot, and you know, plays didn't necessarily go anywhere when the puck was on his stick. They died a lot on his stick, and he was just basically out there twirling around, doing circles, and then, you know, half-ass getting into a board battle in the corners and stuff like that. It just be an effective NHL player. Be a playmaker. He was one. He put up numbers in the National Hockey League. Show that he's in good shape. Show that he has the confidence to play with the puck like Kyle Turris from 5-6 years ago. When he was doing stuff like that, he was an effective player. But last year watching him, Struds, and you watched him just as much as I did, he looked like a shell of himself. He wasn't doing anything. No effect positively on the game or the outcome for the Oilers whatsoever for Kyle Turris, outside of a couple of goals, which, you know, were pleasant surprises when they actually occurred.
Yeah, well, the good news for Turris, it'd be impossible to be as unproductive as he was last year, so he can only go up. We'll see where it goes from there. Mike Smith, 2 years, $2.2 million. It is interesting to note, because the new change in the CBA, because Smith's contract and salary is lower this year, it's $1.9 million, and next year it's $2.5 million, and his cap hit is $2.2 million. If he decides to retire, something happens at the end of this season, if he retired, it would just go away, right? That's the new MOU that they had in the CBA. I don't think that's going to be the case, because then he'd have to walk away from $2.5 million. But what do you make of that contract for Mike Smith? I get the sense that, you know, they look at Smith as in the second year of that deal, they're hoping they have another goalie who can be the main guy.
Absolutely. I think totally is the case. And the other thing, too, I kind of admire this about Mike Smith is his – he tries to – when people – cast out on him or don't think he's capable anymore, it motivates him, and he uses that to fuel his fire, and generally he shows up and performs well. And I think he's kind of using that again going into this season. I'm sure it's going to be the rhetoric next season, depending on what happens in this season. But in a perfect world, boys, that's what's happening. He's a guy you can rely on for, what, like 50 games. You bring in a 1B, try to find one either via trade or free agency this offseason in the next week or two here. And then you transition, and then you hope either Stuart Skinner is coming along and showing really good progress, that at some point maybe he could take the reins. You got Konovalov that's coming over from Russia. You've got Olivier Rodrigue in the mix still. So you're buying these guys some time, hoping that Mike Smith can perform to at least the level he did last year, which was actually surprisingly very good. And then whoever else comes in can kind of bridge the gap to the next guy probably. And I know, you know, if Kosa's there at 20, I think the Oilers are going to be all over him, even though we heard Ken Holland today talk about he thinks he's probably picking a forward, but who knows what's going to happen tomorrow night.
Tommy, have yourself a great one. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Sounds good. See you tomorrow, guys.